This is the Leadership Momentum Podcast with Chris Brown and Ken Coleman.
Joined in studio by Chris Brown, I am Ken Coleman, and we've got a fantastic episode coming up for you. Our feature conversation is with Dave Stone, lead pastor of Southeast Christian Church in beautiful Louisville, Kentucky. And stay tuned for after the interview, Chris Brown will also give you a fantastic article that you need to read, and it will help you. But first, Chris, good to be back in studio with you. How are you, sir?
Yes, I am doing well. Glad to be here in studio with you, Ken.
Back off the road. You've been at Fox News a couple times. Talk about what you're talking about there on Fox News. They're having you talk about relationships and money, right?
Yeah, financial infidelity, cheating when it comes to finances. So pretty cool topic.
Very, very good stuff. Well, hey, I know you're very excited because you have become friends with Dave Stone and the entire leadership team at Southeast Christian Church, and you really have begun to observe and look at how their culture works, and it's really fitting because you picked Dave Stone as the guy to talk to about organizational health as it relates to the church. What have you noticed about Dave and his team and what they're doing right?
I was blown away that such a large church, you know, over 20,000 people attending every weekend, they're making a huge impact there in Louisville, but you know, so many times, you know, organizations grow so fast that their infrastructure can't keep up with it. And what I've been amazed by is Bob Russell, the founding pastor, and then Dave Stone now, they've been able to grow, they've been able to expand, to be strategic, be organizational, but at the same time, not lose that pastoral heart. They've had an opportunity to keep their staff healthy, their volunteers healthy. Just when you go there and you're on campus, you can't help but realize that that campus reeks of health. And so it was just mind-blowing to me. And so I wanted to make sure we talked about it.
What have you noticed about that culture specifically at Southeast? It's obviously, a big part of it is intentional. But how much of it has now just become organic, if I can use that term?
Yeah, well, everything starts at the top, and that's obvious. And Dave walks around with a level of humility. He leads with a level of humility and vulnerability. He talks a lot about that in this interview, and you'll hear that in his voice. It's really impressive.
Now, you and I were talking to Pat Lencioni recently,
yeah.
And of course, his latest book is Advantage, mm-hmm. And he says, if you haven't read the book, in short, he says that the advantage above all advantages is a healthy culture, and he said something that was kind of shocking to us. I want to ask you to translate it to the church world. He said that he would estimate, based on his experience, that 15% of businesses are actually healthy.
Yeah, when I heard that.
Do you think that,
that
translates to the church as well?
Oh, yes. Yes. It blew me away. And really unhealthy. In our minds, sometimes we think of this dysfunction that's just out of control. A lot of times, unhealthiness in organizations is sneaky. You don't realize it, but there's this lack of openness. Your leadership meetings look a little bit different. And then he noted in the book, three out of the four things were about clarity, about not having enough clarity. And so many organizations, when I travel around the country, they don't have clarity in the organization. What are the expectations on a weekend? What are the expectations during a week? Their role, their KRA, their job description, and whether we like it or not. Churches have an organizational component about them. It's not just some good feel-good place that happens on the weekend. That feel-good place that happens on the weekend where people grow spiritually, it doesn't happen on accident. We've got to lead organizationally. And so Patrick talked a little bit about that, and then Dave talks a little bit about that as well.
Well, I know you believe Dave Stone and his leadership really model this, and so we are very blessed, I got to tell you folks, to get some of the finest church leaders in America come and speak to our entire company of over 450 strong, and Dave Stone was recently in town to speak to our team, and we got to corral him into the studio here and have a conversation with him that I know you are going to enjoy. So get out your pens, your papers, whatever you want to do, and I'm telling you, you need to lock in, because here is Chris and I with Pastor Dave Stone.
Hey, Dave, good to see you.
How are you, buddy?
So glad you're here in Nashville.
It's an honor to be here. It's one of my favorite places to travel to, and of course, getting to be with the whole team of all of you all today. What a great time.
Yeah, well, we're excited to have you. I remember just the last year heading up to Southeast and seeing you there. Well, we really appreciated being there. When I was there, I was absolutely blown away by y'all's vision and everything that's going on. Tell us a little bit about Southeast, just in case they were, like, you know, living underneath a rock or something. Man, tell us all about what God's doing through Southeast.
Well, it's a unique church. It's 53 years old. It started back in 1962, and it's a church that has not had dramatic growth. It's just had steady growth for 53 years. And so we have multi-site campuses. We have a thriving missions program and outreach. We like to think that God's doing something incredible through the worship and through the preaching, through small group Bible studies. And I just think it's a place of joy. When people ask me, what's Southeast like? I try to say, you know, I hear this comment a whole lot when I talk to new members, because I meet with every new member the next week after they've joined in a group. And the two comments I hear more than anything is, I sense this presence of the Lord, the Spirit of the Lord's there. And the other is, this is a place of joy. And that's what we want. We think that living the Christian life, we should be having more fun than anybody else. Christ said, I've come to have life more abundantly, to give you life more abundantly, and we think we should live life to the fullest.
Yeah, well, that's exactly what I had heard about Southeast. And then when I experienced it myself, I'm like, man, I've got to get Dave in the, got to get him in the studio. And so let me ask you some leadership questions. I really want to focus in on staff health and church health. So this is for the attendees and also for the staff. You guys are just reeking of health. There's got to be some strategic and intentional leadership things that you're doing that our podcast listeners could learn from. Can you tell us a little bit about some of those keys to that health that Southeast is known for?
Yeah, we've tried to create a place that is authentic and where people can be vulnerable. I think if you are in a climate where people can't be open and they can't share their struggles with one another, then that's not going to flourish. And a person's going to feel awkward and guilty. I'm thrilled that we have had people on staff come to another staff member and say, hey, this is a struggle that I have. Can you help me with this? And we've tried to breed that into our folks, that this is not a perfect place, very imperfect leaders, but we're trying to point people to Christ. We have a monthly all-staff meeting. We just met yesterday. It's a real upbeat pick me up, a lot of craziness, a lot of funny one-liners hollered out from people, sometimes not a whole lot of respect among the ranks. And I'll tell you, when people come for the first time, they just sit there after it's over and they will say, you know, I've been in the corporate world for 20 years and I've never experienced anything like this. We laughed our heads off, we worshiped, we prayed and huddled up and prayed for the needs of the people around us, all these different things. We celebrate. And I think a big key to staff health is holding up the core values and the ideals by telling stories and testimonies. If we tell the stories and testimonies that are taking place, that's when I think they're riveted by that and they realize that's something that we place a very high value on and that's what we want to do.
Yeah, so for the leader that's out there right now, and they hear you need to be vulnerable and have a fun environment, they're hearing that. Where's the line for a leader when it comes to vulnerability? How vulnerable is too vulnerable, or how open, how accessible? Those are all words that are being thrown around the church world. Tell us a little bit about where you think that line is.
I'll give you an example. One time a preacher shared of the huge struggle that he had when Victoria's Secrets had their fashion show. And he went in graphic detail telling his congregation how it was all he could do not to click on that mouse in order to watch that, and talked about that struggle. That might have been a nice passing comment to make, but when you pull the veil back that far, now you've made every woman in your congregation feel uncomfortable around you for the next 3 months. Mm-hmm. So I think there are places and there is an appropriateness to it. I think if you share something like that in, we have a men's meeting on Thursday morning, on Thursday night, also on Saturday morning. If it was in that setting and say, you know, guys, I'll tell you what, you know, I struggle with lust and, you know, I have to, when I hear that this thing is coming up, I got to tell myself, you know, I got to stay as far away from that as I can, you know? So I think you have to weigh it based upon who you're telling it to and how much you disclose of it. I had a person say to me after one time, I said, I struggle with lust, come up to me and say, you just told every woman in our church. And two ladies came up and confronted me on it. Both ladies, their husbands had been in ministry and they had an affair. And, so I understand people having that antenna up, but I also want to show that humanness. I don't think I have to unpackage that, But, you know, I'm always quick to say that 95% of men struggle with lust and the other 5% struggle with lying.
Mm, that's the truth. Dave, I want to follow up to this conversation because we've been talking about health, emotional health a bit. But when you look at an organization like your church, as Chris, you know, has said, and Chris really has observed and he's hung out and he's seen this church behind the curtain, if you will. How have you fostered healthy leadership culture? Meaning you've got so many people on your staff, men and women, who've got to carry the ball that they're designed to carry. You can't do it all.
You're on the front lines.
How have you developed a healthy leadership culture where they do their thing and they feel free to do what they're called to do?
Well, micromanagement suffocates an organization, whether it's a church, whether it's a company, whatever it might be. And so I think if you hire the right people, and you go back to Jim Collins' book, Good to Great, and get people the right seat on the bus, you know, that's half of it, is making those right hires. The other thing that's important is, even if you have the right person, but they're not in the right spot, is to have that willingness to say, you know what, hey, you are gifted and you are talented. I don't think we've got you in the role that is really utilizing your potential. And so we will oftentimes move a person over rather than just say, I don't think this is a good fit for you, because we're affirming that there is something about them. We just haven't got the right spot yet. I think another big piece of this, I'm going to tell you, the preacher that I followed, Bob Russell, was there for 40 years. And when you talk about leadership culture and all these things, it's really more what he established, and I got to inherit it, and now I'm keeping the ball rolling. So if anybody's listening that says, you know, wow, how did this happen? Bob Russell was the one, and he was a senior leader. And what I love about him is that I've never met a man who could have tooted his own horn, but he had such an incredible level of humility. And so the lesson that comes for all of us on staff is, I am to be the exception and not the example. And I am to be the one who is the humble servant. I can't tell you how many times, you know, I remember one time we had an Easter service at Freedom Hall. And we had back 18,000 people come, and we had everything there. We moved children's ministry stuff there. And he just preached 18,000 people. An hour and a half later, he's with the volunteer team, moving cribs, nursery, toys. And I just looked over and thought, he gets it.
Yeah.
And that's probably the most important leadership lesson that our culture has picked up, is we want to affirm humility, vulnerability, authenticity, all these things, and we want to guard and protect that walk with Christ.
Yeah, what I'm hearing is all these great examples of leadership, but at the foundational level, what we're talking about is cultivating a culture of trust.
Yeah.
There is a tremendous amount of trust at Southeast, and I think when you have that, that health is naturally the byproduct of it. There's tremendous trust at Southeast. Now, one of those characteristics we just talked about was vulnerability. Okay, so what are some mistakes that you've had throughout your journey leading at Southeast that have led to even more trust, because you've leveraged the mistake and actually even made it a little bit public? Maybe it's with the church, the attendees, or maybe it's just with the staff, or maybe just with the executive team. But it was a mistake that you were vulnerable about, and then now you look back and you're like, you know what? I actually cultivated more trust because I made a mistake and owned up to it.
You know, I could give you a lot of the different ones, because I make plenty of mistakes. And when you own it, all of a sudden you've modeled for your staff, it's okay to fail.
Mm-hmm.
Failure is not falling down, it's staying down. You know, Chuck Swindoll says, stumblers who fall down and stay down are a dime a dozen. In fact, they're useless. But stumblers who, when they get up, are as rare as rubies. In fact, they're priceless. And so we want to have a culture where it's okay to fail. We laugh about it. You know, we had an idea of, you know, hey, let's start putting people in golf carts coming in and out from long ways away. And we thought it was a great idea. Well, ladies tried it for the first week, and after that, they never did it again, because no lady wants to come into a church in Kentucky with her hair being blown after she's just spent an hour on it.
Yeah, really.
So we chalked that up, and we said to everybody, hey, that idea didn't fly here, you know?
Yeah.
And so, but one of the more public ones that I would look back, after my transition of leadership following a 40-year leader, in my first year and a half, I underestimated our older constituents, our senior adults, and I had been good friends with them, had had a great relationship, but I'm telling you what, I didn't listen to them as well as I should have on some things. And maybe a better way to say is I just didn't communicate with them. And I called them all together a year and a half later, and I planned a special program for them of a lot of components that they would like. And then I just stood up. I got a lump in my throat just thinking about it. And I just stood up in front of all of them. And I said, I owe you guys an apology.
Wow.
And I said, I just thought that because you had known me for a while that you would just accept any leadership changes that I make. But I sense that many of you feel like Bob Russell handed the keys to the car to a 16-year-old driver who's just starting out. And I'll do a better job of communicating with you. And then I went the layer deeper. And that's where we usually come up short when it comes to really saying I'm sorry, whether it's our kids or whether it's us as adults in the workplace or in church life. And so I swallowed and I said, I need to say something and you need to hear me say this. I said, I need you, and this church needs you. And I can't do it if I don't have the senior adults behind me. I can't. And that became a turning point. I mean, it became a turning point for our church. And I had a line of people afterwards that said, I'm sorry I've said this behind your back. I'm sorry that I've not gotten behind you. I'm sorry. And my confession opened them up to confess some things that they had been doing behind the scenes, but they'd look me in their eyes, and oftentimes their eyes were wet, and they would say, we've got your back now. And it was a major turning point. I don't think we ever would have gotten there had I not admitted my bozo mistakes. Because if I would have just said, you know, hey, I'm the leader now. I'm the leader. You're supposed to support me. You're supposed to submit to me. And that never flies.
Boy, that's so refreshing.
Yep.
I want to move into the stewardship discussion here because you've been such a leader on this issue on finances, personal finance. And you were sharing a story with Chris and I earlier this morning about a message. And you just kind of shared a great turning point, a breakthrough moment in your leadership. Share this story because this was a breakthrough when it came to talking about financial stewardship, this message you preached.
Yeah, and, you know, if anybody, your church is in debt or you are in debt, you know, I had a lot of investment debt from making some decisions that looked great for a couple years, and then the next few years when the economy turned, it was keeping me awake at night, and I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to make these payments on properties that I thought were going to really help our family. So I got in debt pretty deeply, and talk about vulnerability. I shared that story with the church, and I preached with a backpack on, and every 3 minutes, a gal came out and put a 10-pound weight, another 10-pound weight. I got up to 70 or 75 pounds on the backpack. And while I preached, you know, I was trying to reposition it. And as it went, you know, I would labor in my voice. And it wasn't acting. It was
70 pounds. Huh?
Exactly. Yeah, so, you know, but I came to that point and I said, debt suffocates you. And a lot of the Ramsey principles that Dave shares quoted him a whole lot in that message. But then the message was entitled 7 years, and said in the Old Testament, people tried to get out of debt in 7 years. And I said, so by August of 2018, who wants to join in on this? And I challenged them and also had them take the weights back out in my last 10 minutes. And I stopped. I'll never forget this. After they'd taken about 30 pounds out, I said to them, can I be honest with you? I don't even feel like they've taken it out. But then once it got to 40 pounds out of it, I was like a new man.
Wow.
And that's how it works in getting out of debt.
Such a good analogy, yes.
So we had the next week 20% of our congregation say that they signed something saying, I want to be totally debt-free in 7 years of everything. Another 20% said that they want to be totally debt-free except for their home. And now we refer back to it. We don't go 4 months without some reference back to it and keeping it before the people. And if anybody listening wants that manuscript or wants to watch that sermon and preach it at your church, you certainly have my blessing. And
I imagine you're okay with them stealing the backpack idea, aren't you?
That's what I'm saying. I'll send them
that's
the whole manuscript.
Sharing the idea. Sharing.
Ken, I'm not going to send them a backpack.
Okay, well, that's fair. Yeah,
all right, they got to come up with their own weights.
Yeah, go get your own JanSport. Yeah, I got you. I want to ask you something, Chris, here. Yeah. I want to stop for a second. This is an important conversation, and you travel the country. Mm-hmm. You speak at these churches, you hang out with the Dave Stones and in the smaller churches, the mid-sized churches. And when I hear him tell that story, I just want you to maybe share with our audience, because this is still not an easy thing to preach about. We know this. The data tells us this. You hear this. Yeah. Why is it a big deal? And maybe what impact do you see it kind of create when a senior pastor or a lead pastor does what Dave did?
Yeah, well, I see two things. One, I see that whole concept of vulnerability once again and the modeling. There's so much power behind a leader modeling. When they do that, it's not necessarily you're talking about a theory. You're actually practicing, well, we've heard this before, practicing what you preach. I also see here in the story of what happened there at Southeast is the power of being a debt-free church, because that actually led to being a debt-free church, and that's created a drama-free environment. And we're talking, you know, at a macro level here about what makes a church healthy, what makes a staff healthy. And that's what I felt when I was there. I felt like it was a drama-free place that could really focus in on Jesus, can focus in on attendees, the help that's needed, soul care, discipleship, community outreach. That's what I saw. And so when I do travel the country and I'm talking to pastors, that's usually the number one thing I hear is, man, we're a debt-free environment. We're a drama-free environment. It is awesome. All the things that we want to do in those executive meetings that, you know, all those times where we were, oh, we can't do this, we can't do that because of money. Now it's like we have options. Where do we want to spend it? All these things that we have to make a list of all the things we've wanted to do, and we have to put them in priority of where all this extra money is going to go. So it really is fascinating to watch.
Dave, he makes a great point there. How has it, in his point, when it frees you up, the drama's gone, the stress gone, how does it change your vision casting?
Well, it was hand in hand with the personal debt challenge to people. And we said, if we're going to ask you to do this, we want to do the same as a church. And so we accelerated our timetable. And we got out of debt, but the freedom that we feel, we just opened up a whole new multi-site of about $10 million. It was a year of construction coming together, and I thought we would incur a lot of debt with that. We didn't have a drive. We didn't have anything. And our finance people said, I said, so how much do we owe after that building? Said, nothing. We cash flowed all of our mortgage payments. We kept making mortgage payments to ourselves. And we don't owe anything. So we have a new campus with 1,700 people worshiping every week in a poor area of town where the majority of the people who are coming are unchurched, and they don't have to be saddled with, oh, we've got to dive into some fundraising thing when they don't know the first thing about the gospel. So they're learning stewardship principles, and it's always fun to watch the stewardship levels increase the more mature the people come in Christ.
And as a lead pastor, how involved are you in the process? I mean, I remember just a few months ago, you were in process of having a full-fledged stewardship pastor and starting a stewardship ministry. Tell us about where that's headed and how involved do you have to be? Because you have a lot of things on your plate. I mean, that podcast listener right now who's listening and they're thinking, oh, I've got to do the weekend teaching. I've got to lead staff meeting. And that now I'm worried about stewardship ministry as well. Tell us about, you know, that, I guess, question. Empowerment or delegation.
Well, there are some hires that I'm going to lean in, and I'm going to make certain that I'm aware of, and I've got my voice. This is one of those ones. And a stewardship pastor, we're right in the process right now. We've been interviewing the last 2 months, and I see it as a game changer. Mm-hmm. I've learned so much from you guys, from you and from Dave and the entire team. And a couple of days that we spent back last fall, you walk away from that and you say, man alive, we would be so foolish not to have this. And this is a big rock issue. So we lean in on that because it's one that will have incredible repercussions for for the long term. And we trust that if we get people being a good steward of their time, talent, and treasure, that incredible things will happen in the kingdom.
Yeah, so we've got these listeners that are incredibly passionate about their churches. They're trying to progress. They're trying to get to the next level. They're trying to get to their goals. When it comes to health, no matter where they're at in their journey, what would you say to them would be a great first step for them to get to the next level with health? With the staff, or where would you have them start? To say, man, our health is not where we want it to be.
I think it's important for them to understand what the priorities are. What are the wins for your congregation? To highlight those wins, because if the staff starts highlighting the wins and you as a senior leader highlight them, it trickles down. And so everybody starts doing it. The second piece of that would be that you have the opportunity to show people what that win is, what your mission, what your vision, what your purpose is, whatever your church calls that. And the more you espouse that and share that, the more people embrace that. And so you hold those stories up. When people on your staff understand what their vision is, ours is connecting people to Jesus and one another. That's the win. That's what we're all about. So when the staff starts to realize, oh, that's a win for us, how can I help that be accomplished? And regardless of what my role is, wherever I serve within the church or on staff, if that's the win, we're all going to celebrate that. It might not be in our, quote, department or ministry, but when we have a family palooza, which is what we call a big thing at Labor Day at all of our campuses, it's a free carnival, and you have all of these people who come, and probably only 20% of them go to our church. And then you start seeing that they see our Kidway program. They see other programs while they're there, and they tour the facilities. And then those people start coming, and then we start sharing in staff meetings. These people have come to Christ now. Wow. They stewarded their time well on Labor Day when they gave up their day to come over and volunteer, even though they don't work in the children or elementary ministry.
It's powerful.
And so now everybody's in on the play. It's a win for all of us. Yay, God.
That is incredible.
Chris, I got to tell you, this is a joy, isn't it? I
mean, when you rich.
Yeah, really good stuff. We're so much better for it. Mm-hmm. Dave, one final thought. Just encourage pastors. I want to give you the opportunity. We have a lot of pastors and leaders listening in here. And I don't know what's on your heart. I know you just spoke to our entire team, but how would you encourage our listeners?
I know stewardship is a big heartbeat with you all. And in my years of preaching, I have been scared of it at times. I've moved away from it at times. I haven't given it the attention that I should have at times. But now I'm in a season where I realize if I'm supposed to preach the whole counsel of God, man, I am doing them an incredible disservice if I don't talk to them about that. Because the greatest joys my family has ever experienced have come from generosity. And my kids, I see it now. I love it. My wife was looking at my son's debit card list of things from school and said, now, you know, this doesn't make sense. You went to Chick-fil-A, you went this other place, you spent $30 at this, and, you know, we were kind of getting on him that he had spent all this money in one day because he doesn't have that much. And he pays one-third of his college. And my son says, well, one of those was for a professor, and I got him a gift card, and that's why it's a round number. And the other one is for a guy who had a blood test that day and was going through something pretty crazy, and I just thought if I could take him out to his favorite restaurant. And the other was the $4 thing was mine.
Wow.
And you know, you feel like a slug in one sense that you even brought it up, but in the same breath, you're like, I think he got it, you know? And so I've learned we need to transfer that same thing that we teach to our kids with generosity with the church. Someone said this, said, never be afraid to ask God's people for God's money. And I've tried to live by that in recent years because it's not ours, it's his anyway.
Well, I want to say on behalf of our audience, we're grateful to you as you model the way. You're a great friend of the gospel. You're a great friend to leaders and church people everywhere. Appreciate what you're doing and hanging out with us. We're all better for it.
Thanks, guys. Love y'all.
The Again, Dave, thank you so much for being a part of this podcast and the conversation. All right, Chris, so you're listening to that, and you did it with me live. What did you write down? What did you take away from that conversation?
Well, I picked up on a ton of stuff. First and foremost is the vulnerability piece. How much is too vulnerable, too open? But establishing that culture of trust and authenticity. Then he talked about hiring the right people. That is so huge. I have so often hired the wrong people and paid the price. Talked about humility, starting with the leader, gave a lot of credit to Bob Russell doing that. And then being debt free.
Yeah, he really, you could see he almost exhaled when we asked him that question.
Yes, and I'm glad we got there because I don't think that gets enough credit, that whole drama free zone. Being able to free up that amount of margin in your budget allows you so many more options, and so many ministry leaders are not functioning in a stressful environment. And then the last thing I picked up on was the stewardship ministry and the stewardship pastor. That is huge. You know, the stewardship ministry is the only ministry that can brag and say that they make every other ministry better. No other ministry can say that. And he's experiencing that there at Southeast.
Do you sense, by the way, on this position of stewardship ministry pastor, you know, a part-time or a full-time position, do you see that beginning to take off in the American church world?
I do. I do. Even in smaller churches, it might not be a full-time paid person. It could just be a volunteer. But having somebody who really owns, and this isn't donor development, this is owning financial discipleship. We're to teach the full counsel of God, 360-degree discipleship. And the churches that are doing this and doing it well are seeing God do some incredible things.
Well, there's some incredible things that you and our Stewardship Central team here. By the way, the website, you're going to want to write this down. It's stewardshipcentral.org. That's stewardshipcentral.org. Just real quickly, Chris, we've got a great resource, a free article here that you have written that I think really fits in well to our conversation today. But why does stewardshipcentral.org exist?
What we're doing here on the podcast is allowing it's really a free roundtable of best minds. And the article and the website is the same thing. It's just, listen, the people that are doing the best in the country at certain things, we want to put that on there. Now, you may be listening to the podcast today and be thinking, well, I mean, I don't know if we're healthy. You know, I feel like I'm really missing the mark when it comes to this. I wrote an article on stewardshipcentral.org that is all about comparing yourself against other ministries. It is a trap. It is a trap. Oftentimes, victories are public, but our struggles are private. And so I want to encourage listeners today to go to stewardshipcentral.org and to check out that specific article along with all the other free resources that are there for them.
I always find that you always learn more when you teach.
Mm-hmm.
When you wrote this article about comparing ministries, what'd you take away from it after you wrote it for others? What'd you learn?
I started out writing it, talking about other pastors comparing themselves, and it came out, and it was, oh shoot, I've got a problem with this myself. And so you'll see in the article that probably over 50% of it is my own demons, all the way back from high school, me comparing myself against the varsity players when I'm a little 5'2" JV punk. So you'll see that in there, and we all have that problem, and I think it's good to address it.
It's good stuff. Again, the article is on comparing ministries. It is at stewardshipcentral.org, and it is free. Well, folks, we really do value your time, and I can tell you that we are excited about what is coming ahead. You will not believe the conversations that God is bringing to us to help you and equip you. I want to say again, Chris, always a pleasure to be with you in the studio, my man.
Yes, sir.
Good stuff. We want to thank Dave Stone for his valuable time as well. Well, folks, on behalf of Chris Brown, Bob Borquez, our producer, and the entire Ramsey Stewardship Solutions team, thank you so much for listening. We'll talk with you again very soon.